My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Fedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Howdy, hey, and hello there. Welcome to another episode of Weird Finance, where we try to help you feel just a little bit weird about money, one conversation at a time. I am your host, Paco De Leon, and on this week's episode, I'm chatting with Patrick Hicks. This holiday season, give yourself the gift of peace of mind. Don't worry, this isn't a commercial. However, you might be wondering, how can I possibly buy peace of mind, Paco? I mean, in many ways, you can't. But honestly, I'm just looking for a way to talk about estate planning that doesn't bum you out, because to talk about estate planning is to talk about our mortality. In the wise words of Keanu Reeves on what he thinks happens when we die, quote, I know that the ones who love us will miss us, end quote. So let's not think about us barreling towards the dark abyss of the unknown. Let's think about the ones who love us. And with them in mind, on this week's episode, we're going to learn about trusts and wills with our guest, Patrick Hicks. Buckle up for a fun one, and please enjoy my chat with Patrick. All right, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about the very thrilling and exciting world of wills and trusts. Tell me, how does one find themselves in this world? And the thing I'm fascinated with you is you also have a master's in taxation. Can you just walk me through some of the decision-making that got you to be the expert that you are today?
Yes, I'm happy to. I feel like I'm having my life choices questioned already at the start. This is great. No, I love being an estate planning attorney. I went to law school not certain with what I would do coming out of law school. And I had a few things that I was interested in, but while I was in law school, I took a class, one of the, you know, required broad subject coverage classes about, you know, wills and trusts. And I just found it fascinating, the types of problems that would come up. And most of these were academic law school type problems. They're not really what you see in real practice. But I said, I just want to learn more about this. And I kept digging in. And what I really came to learn was you know, so much of the law is, you know, combative or adversarial, where there's a winner and a loser. But estate planning, it's transactional in nature. And people say, I want to go see my lawyer to put a plan in place. And then the lawyer gets to help them achieve their goals. And that was really something that I found really appealing, to be able to help people solve their needs and solve their problems. And so took more classes in it and really came to see a large part of estate planning deals with, you know, the tax implications, particularly for higher net worth individuals. When they die and they have taxable estates, these complicated mechanisms, how do you help them achieve their goals? Because tax minimization is a huge goal for those who are very lucky to have that be a risk or a concern. And that's where I led into that master's in tax degree. It was a tax law degree and really focused, or my focus was on estate and gift taxation and how you can, you know, consider and plan for those considerations as part of your overall estate planning. And so after that, went into a broad-based estate planning practice, helping both high net worth individuals and, you know, ordinary individuals who may not have tax concerns that some of those, again, ultra wealthy individuals have, but still have very real problems and very real needs to solve, whether they're tax-based or financial or just personal issues. Being able to help those individuals has been really a pleasure throughout my career.
I love that. So I took a couple of estate planning courses. I took one in college, and then I took one when I went through the UCLA financial planning program. And I have to admit that I actually found the financial planning and the estate planning courses classes the most interesting. And it was because it was the most relatable. Like, all of them were case studies. All of them were like, Jack and Jill get married and have, you know, 4 kids and 17 grandkids. And it was just much more relatable. It wasn't just regular, like, it wasn't like a statistics class where I'm like doing a regression or something gnarly like that. So I really liked it because I could relate to it. But I bet I can put money on the fact that a lot of our listeners are probably not even familiar with what estate planning is. So I would love it if you wouldn't mind just walking us through, explain it to me like I'm 5 years old. What the heck is estate planning?
You know, I've used this line before, and I think the one that resonates the most is estate planning is planning today for what might happen tomorrow. And it really is that simple. You know, a lot of people have a misconception or on a limited view of estate planning of, that's what happens when you die. And that is an important part of estate planning, but that's certainly not the only part. It can be anything that happens tomorrow while you're still alive. So it can be planning for your health and financial wellness, your children's, your family, the loved ones, those you care for, those who rely on you. But it could also be planning for what happens if you experience, you know, a medical emergency and incapacitation, something where you are unable to make your own decisions. That's where estate planning comes in before you even die. You're still alive, but you're unable to make or communicate decisions. You already have a plan in place. And then again, certainly after death, what happens when you are no longer living? What are those decisions that you want to happen? How do you continue to leave your legacy well past the moment of your death, well into the future? So estate planning is not just about death. It's about what happens in all of your tomorrows and past your lifetime. That's what estate planning is really about. It's about you leaving your own legacy.
Before we continue to talk about estate planning, I'm really curious about you personally and the fact that it sounds like every day a big part of your job is thinking about death. And I just want to know, like, has that impacted how you live your day-to-day life?
It has. You know, an interesting fact about me, one of my prior experiences, when I was in college, I served as a volunteer firefighter for the town that the college was in. And I used to point at that as really giving me a different sense of perspective. You know, you get into a corporate work environment, people talk about all the fires they have to put out and the emergencies they're dealing with. And, you know, if you think through it from the actual viewpoint of an actual fire and an actual emergency, they're relatively small scale. And so that's something that I've relied on it throughout my life and throughout my career is the perspective of what are the big problems that you can face and what are the things that you can control. And on the list of things you can control, death is not there. Mm-hmm. So death is inevitable. We all know that. Everyone says that. But what does that really mean? You can't control death. What you can control is the impact of your death and the impact of your life. And that's something, those two really play together, particularly in the estate planner's point of view of death is inevitable. And I'm not a medical professional. I can't delay your death. What I can do is make sure that your life and your death have an impact that you feel good about. So it's helping to really shift the focus onto things that you have control over, to focus on what you can do and how you can enable the right outcomes. That's something that really is empowering, not just for me professionally, but you know, throughout my personal life as well. Like, why be bogged down about something I can't control? I'm going to focus on the things I can control and achieve the outcomes that are as good as I can possibly make them. And there's nothing more I can do. And I'm happy with that result.
I definitely think our philosophies are very much in line. I think the same way, there's so much outside of our control. I mean, it's what makes the ride of life the ride of life. But there are definitely ways that we can focus in and double click on our agency. So I want to know, you know, at what point in a human being's life should they start to prepare for their death from an estate planning perspective? Are we talking like right out of college, when you get married, when you have kids? Walk me through.
The best time to start an estate plan is today, period. It's that simple. And yeah, there's usually a limit in most states that, you know, 16-year-olds or 18-year-olds, there's a lower limit of you must meet a minimum age in order to create an estate plan. So, you know, from a purely technical, impractical perspective, every 18-year-old should have an estate plan in place. It's not realistic, but that's the point in time when you should have an estate plan in place. Now, it doesn't have to be an incredibly complicated estate plan. Your needs as an 18-year-old may be fairly simple. You may just need some really basic documents. And, you know, for an 18-year-old, maybe you're going off to school, you want to make sure that your parents are able to make decisions for you if needed. It could be really simple. But even that, it's not entirely realistic to think that, you know, an 18th birthday, the gift is going to be, here's your estate plan. You're now an adult. When people really start to see the moments in their life when an estate plan becomes important, those are those major life events that a lot of people will go through. So, you know, maybe you're getting married or you're in a committed relationship. You have someone else that you're caring for. That's a moment when you actually have a broader impact. It's not just my impact on myself, but it's my impact on someone else. And the same is true if you have children as well. You now have other people who are dependent upon you for their own success throughout life. You need to have a plan that ensures that those children, those people who rely on you, have what they need. You know, if you don't have children, another important consideration is pets as well. But again, the same point is anyone who's relying on you for their care and their support, that's a good time to have a plan in place. And then even if you don't have that, just as you're advancing through life, if you have accumulated more success, more wealth, more things, it's just the natural progression. What happens to all of those? So you just need to think about how do you have a broader impact, whether it's other people around you or other pets around you or just the things around you. Once you get to a tipping point, it's almost natural of, I now need an estate plan because I have enough to be concerned about now. An 18-year-old may not, but at some point you do. There's no hard line. But it's just a natural tendency for most people to evolve to a point where today's the day I need an estate plan.
So you mentioned gifting an 18-year-old estate planning for their birthday. I got to say, if that happened to me at 18, I would have probably reacted in an ungraceful way for that kind of gift. But I appreciate you bringing it to light. Like, you know, as soon as you're an adult, there's certain things that you should be considering for your body and what would happen if you couldn't make medical decisions. The other thing I'm really curious about is pets. And I don't know what you're allowed to share with us, but do you have any fascinating or interesting stories about pets in estate planning?
You know, it's every law school class about estate planning will have a topic that talks about some bizarre or unexpected outcome, typically from an incredibly wealthy, eccentric individual leaving all of their money to their pets. There's not just one story. There are dozens of these stories you can point to. From my class, it was the hotel heiress, Leona Helmsley, leaving all of her wealth to the dog named Trouble. Guarantee if you go search right now for estate planning, you know, millionaire pet, you're going to see a list of results. Then you can dig through and really get in on these. They're fascinating stories.
I need to ask the natural next question.
Yes.
So Trouble the dog inherits, you know, a few million dollars now. What happens when Trouble dies? Does the estate plan dictate where the money goes after the dog dies?
You know, it's a great question. It's a fascinating story. But, you know, the question before that is, can a dog inherit money?
Right.
Is a dog a person or is a dog property? There's these really existential philosophical questions you get into that unfortunately are left to lawyers to figure out. And they're not always the best to resolve these. And they have to reach a conclusion. but maybe not necessarily the right answer. And so what has essentially worked out as a balance is typically a pet may or may not be able to receive money, receive an inheritance, but maybe someone else can receive that inheritance to be used for the care of that pet.
Got it.
So you get into a situation where it's essentially a trust. You know, I will leave money to my nephew to care for my dog, for example, that type of indirect relationship. If you have that indirect relationship, then yeah, there will be a situation. Well, what happens when that pet dies? Where does the rest of the money go? And so you can have their pet trust. They're an actual estate planning technique now of how do I leave money for the care of a pet and what happens afterwards? These are legitimate questions that estate planners have to ask individuals and deal with. They are important concerns. You know, most people think of their pets as a member of their family. I don't necessarily think that they think that they're entitled to an inheritance, but a lot of people choose to leave that inheritance to their dog, or at least ensure that their pet is cared for.
Sure. Okay. So you're starting to talk about trusts now. And my main experience with trusts was when I was working as a financial planner, I remember telling my boss, hey, I'm going to go to law school. And his brother, who was the head of the company, went to law school. And there were a whole bunch of former lawyers in our office, and all of them were trying to discourage me from going to law school. They were like, you're going to hate it. You're not going to end up being a lawyer. You're going to end up in debt. And then like right around that time, I remember like, I can't remember if it was the New York Times, but there was some big media company reporting on all of the like ABA scandals where all these law schools were hiring former students and then showing that those students were employed and therefore they had like a high employment rate, right? One of the things he did to me to deter me into going to law school was he would print out a trust document, print out every single page, and he would drop it on my desk. And he would say, hey, can you read through this trust document and let me know what you think? And I remember being like, this guy is out of his mind. First of all, I'm like 26 years old. I have no experience with legalese. But in retrospect, I saw what he was trying to do. He was like, this is what you would be dealing with. So my understanding with trusts is it's a big legal document that dictates what, like how assets are going to be deployed. Is that correct? Can you walk us through exactly what a trust is and what it involves?
I love that your experience with the trust is a personal one, because what most people have as a, you know, a reference point for a trust is some sort of Hollywood depiction of a trust fund baby or an incredibly wealthy individual. And they think, well, a trust is not for me. And that's not always the case. Unfortunately, many of the trusts are these big, thick, heavy, boring documents that are difficult to understand. You know, trust and will, we're trying to change that and make estate planning more approachable and understandable so that you don't need a 3-year law degree to be able to read and understand a document. You should be able to have a document that I know this says what I want it to say. So we're working to make those changes, but there's a long way to go still. But a trust is at its core a relationship between three parties. If you're a visual person, you can keep a triangle in your mind, but there's three parties. There's the person who creates the trust, which is known as the settlor or the grantor, and they put their money into the trust. And then there's the person who manages those funds. They're the trustee. And they're the one who they hold the funds and they carry out the administration of the trust. And the third party is the beneficiary. And that's who the trust is for. So you have the settlor or the grantor who puts their money into the trust. They give it to the trustee to hold and administer for the benefit of the beneficiary. It sounds maybe simple, but it's really, there's a lot of complexity in that relationship from a legal viewpoint. But that complex relationship allows you to do a lot of the things that a trust does so well. It allows you to create, you know, certain rules for what should happen and when. And that can apply during my lifetime or after my death. So perhaps I create my trust today that just holds my own money. It's not that complicated. I've moved it from my left pocket to my right pocket. You know, most trusts work that way. They're fairly simple initially, but where they really start to shine is after my death. Maybe I want to care for my kids, or I want to provide for my children to receive an education or to travel the world or to start a business, whatever it is. Your trust can specify for your trustee to carry out and administer those funds to achieve those goals. That's really the purpose of a trust, is to allow you to specify what should happen during your lifetime and after your death. There are a lot of other benefits to a trust, and one of the key benefits is probate avoidance. And probate's a whole topic that we could probably get into. But beyond just specifying your goals, a trust lets you achieve those goals in ways that have kind of other ancillary benefits as well. That's why the trust is really the workhorse of modern estate planning for most people, not for everyone, but for most people, a trust is the cornerstone of their estate plan today.
Okay, before we jump into the ever-thrilling world of probate, let's first unpack, can you describe the type of person that a trust is appropriate for?
Sure. So who needs a trust is going to vary or depend a bit on your unique circumstances. So I'm in California, where the laws that apply in California mean a lot more people will need a trust than may be the case in, you know, a state like Iowa, one of the states in the Midwest, where there's just less of a universal need. So state law is one consideration. But then some of the other personal considerations will be things like your asset levels. As you have increasing asset levels, the benefits of a trust start to really pile up. But then even beyond your assets, trusts are a fantastic vehicle for anybody who has, you know, younger children, where they may need to have this extended period of kind of care or preservation of assets. So if I have a two-year-old, I might want to make sure that those assets that I leave for that child are around well into the future. But if I have a 35-year-old child, I'm later in life, I may be more comfortable just giving them assets straight out. So trusts are a great vehicle for people in certain states where state laws may, you know, promote the use of a trust. For individuals with higher net worth, so anybody who's over maybe a few hundred thousand, even up to a million of assets as a floor above that, having a trust is really worthwhile. Or individuals with younger children, blended families, more complex family dynamics, anything where you might just have a particular use case, those are all features that a trust gives you, maybe just a better tool to provide a better result or outcome.
That's a lot lower threshold than I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, so there's a couple different thresholds that are important in estate planning. And one that many people focus on is the estate tax, which is the great boogeyman of estate planning, the federal estate tax. The reality today is that a tiny fraction of people need to be concerned about the federal estate tax. The estate tax thresholds are, you know, pushing $13 million for an individual, over $25 million for couples. So the
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like some of the words you said just went over a lot of people's heads. So let's back up and say, so an estate tax happens when somebody dies, right? Let me try to explain it like an idiot, and then you could come up behind me and sweep up all the wrong things that I've said. So an estate tax comes into play when somebody has a certain amount of assets and they die, and those assets, right, they have to reach a certain threshold, become subject to a flat rate estate tax. Is that correct?
Mostly. What I would change on that is, to start with, first, an income tax applies when, you know, your employer transfers money to you as wages. That transfer incurs a tax on income. An estate tax is also a tax on a transfer, and it's money that, you know, an individual transfers to their beneficiaries upon their death. So it's very comparable to an income tax, but it's that transfer of possession of wealth is the taxable event. With an estate tax, that transfer occurs at death. So if an individual dies and they have assets that exceed the taxable floor, those assets are subject to federal estate tax. And again, it's a tiered tax to some extent. In practice, it works out to be basically a flat tax, but in theory, it's a tiered tax. Okay. But it's a tax that applies if you have assets at your death that exceed the threshold, the floor.
And that floor has changed many times.
It has.
Right.
It has. And it used to be, you know, a relatively low, you know, 650,000 for a long time. And then it jumped to 1 million and then 3 and then 5. And then recently it jumped to 10 and then it's pegged for inflation. So currently, again, that floor is about $13 million for an individual, or a couple can combine theirs and collectively pass about $26 million before they owe any federal estate tax.
Can we make this a little bit more tangible? Let's say Jerry has $11 million that he wants to leave, or he has in his estate, and he dies today. Jerry dies today with $11 million. Does that mean, since he doesn't meet that threshold, that he doesn't owe any estate tax when he transfers his assets? Okay.
Correct. It's 12.92 for 2023, so about $13 million. So if you have up to $13 million, it's zero tax at a federal estate tax level. And if you go over that, it's the first time that you're going to pay any tax on a federal estate tax level.
Okay, great. And so all of this matters, and this is basically why probate, can we talk about probate now and how probate plays into this? And I mean, we're really getting it to the heart of why estate planning matters, especially for those who are higher net worth, who are going to exceed that 12.9 something million.
We are. And the way that really, the easiest way to think about it is the factors you need to consider in your estate plan. And those factors will vary for everyone. And that's why estate planning is inherently a personal decision. For high net worth individuals, for individuals who have over $13 million, the primary factor is often federal estate tax. But even if you're under $13 million, let's just say you're at like $1 million of total assets, you may not be concerned about the federal estate tax. You're under the threshold. It's zero tax from a federal estate tax perspective. But there are other things that you might be concerned about, one of which is probate. And probate is the court process that applies at death for the transfers of assets via a will. But to unpack that a bit, When you die and you have assets in your individual name, well, once you've died, there's got to be a transfer, a process to say, well, you're no longer alive, so where do those assets go? That all happens through the probate process. That's where assets that the individual owned during their lifetime are transferred from that individual to their heirs or their beneficiaries, their family members, whoever it is. That's the process of probate. That is the outcome of probate. Unfortunately, it's a very difficult process, a difficult journey. It's expensive. It's time consuming. It's just, you know, complex at times. And again, in California, you can have, you know, $1 million. You can incur, you know, up to $40,000 of hard fees just to go through the probate process. So that's just the pleasure of dying incurs you a bill of $40,000, which really, you know, it's not an insignificant amount. Sure, you have $1 million of assets you're starting with, but that's $40,000 that's not going to your children, not going to causes you care about. It's a significant bite.
That's a lot.
Just to go through probate.
That's expensive it's expensive to die.
It is, and it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't have to be as expensive to go through probate. You know, at Trust and Will, we're working to offer a new, easier way for you to achieve your probate, to avoid some of those fees, for you to take on a little bit of the work or, you know, rely on a service like Trust and Will Probate to make it less expensive. So there are ways to make it a smaller bite, but there are also ways to completely bypass probate entirely. So there's no bite whatsoever. And, you know, probate applies to assets that pass underneath your will.
Okay.
But if you have a trust, assets that pass under your trust don't go through probate. So you basically can just bypass the probate process entirely by utilizing a trust.
Got it.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to wait until the last minute to give all my tax documents to my accountant. I thought, I can handle the rush and get everything done on time. But I was wrong. A couple years ago, I missed the tax deadline altogether. I had to pay penalties and interest. It was a bummer and mad costly mistake that could have been easily avoided. Besides penalties, I also found that waiting until the last minute meant I was rushing through my tax preparation, which led to errors and missed deductions. Stupid. I know. Now, I start gathering my tax documents early and give myself plenty of time to review them for accuracy. Being prepared means I make sure to contribute to my retirement account and health savings account before the deadline instead of frantically trying to process my contributions in the 11th hour. Waiting until the last minute is just not worth the stress, bro. And potential mistakes? Every year, I take control of my finances and plan ahead for tax season. When it comes to procrastinating with your tax documents, just say no.
Weird Finance.
Weird Finance. Weird Finance. Weird Finance.
So let me ask you this. If somebody's listening right now and say they have a family member who's really sick or a family member who just passed away and they're like, oh no, we're going to have to go through the probate process. Is that something Trust and Will can help out with, like once the individual has already passed away, or is this something that they needed to plan in advance?
So the ideal situation is that the individual has an estate plan in advance, and Trust and Will can help create that estate plan. Yes. But also at that moment of death, whether they have an estate plan or not, they may have to go through a probate process. And Trust and Will can help with that for many people, not all cases. Some cases are unique and you may need a lawyer's advice or legal guidance. But for many individuals who do have a death in the family and they just need to kind of cross that gap that is probate, Trust and Will does offer a probate service that can help individuals with that need. And one of the things we do is we make it a little bit easier and less confusing, but we make it a lot less expensive. So that $40,000 that $1 million state in California might have paid, it could be down to as low as, you know, $1,500 or even less in some cases if you're willing to take on and do a little bit of work yourself. Instead of paying a lawyer to do it, if you're willing to utilize the technology and incur some just a little bit more effort, you can save almost all of those fees and expenses and really make it a worthwhile investment of time. So your total cost might be measured in a couple of thousand rather than 40,000. So that's a big savings there.
Yeah, I saw that. I was looking at the website before we got on this interview to do a little bit of research. And I saw that you guys have three options, basically, when it comes to helping individuals. The most expensive is bringing on an attorney, least expensive, I think, seemed like kind of DIY, and the middle was somewhere in between. Does that sound right? Am I explaining that correctly?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we're really working to make this an improvement to the existing process as much as we can. And so we know that what everyone needs is going to be a little bit different. It's a unique situation. So some people are saying, hey, it's a simple process. I just need a little bit of help with the forms. And that's kind of a more DIY solution. And some people are saying, well, I need a little bit more guidance here. I need someone to kind of, you know, work with me and make sure that I'll give you the information, but I need you to put it in the forms type outcome. And that's more of a concierge solution in the middle. And then there's individuals who just need a little more white glove, high touch solution. And they say, I have some additional needs. I may need some guidance from a lawyer. We've also worked to provide that as well, because doing it yourself is great for a lot of people, but some people still need to be able to consult with their lawyer and get legal advice. And maybe they don't need a lawyer to do all of it.
Right.
They may need a lawyer to do some of it. So we're trying to really create a spectrum of offerings to ensure that everyone has a size that will fit their needs.
Right. And it sounds like it's something that over time, like today, if I use Trust and Will, I could probably do the DIY, but in 15 years, my estate planning might be a lot more complicated. And, we have multiple businesses and kids in the family and things like that. And so probably makes sense to then consult an attorney. One of the things that was coming up for me as I was hearing you talk about the estate tax and high net worth individuals and then probate, my first reaction was I feel like there's a lot of people who are going to hear you talking about high net worth individuals avoiding taxes, and they're going to be pretty upset about that. They're going to think people, one way to prohibit dynastic wealth is in fact to pay taxes. I agree with that statement. However, I want to say the other side of the coin of that is there's a lot of people who are listening who are probably stepping into the first opportunity they can to create generational wealth. And it might not be that 13 million, right? It might be, like you mentioned, today you might have a few hundred thousand, and over your lifetime that might get to a million. And I think one of the things that's really important to recognize is just learning the rules of the game, learning about wills, learning about trusts, learning about the spectrum of you could lose $40,000 on probate, and or if you go and multiply your net worth, to the magnitude of 15, you're going to owe a lot more. But just knowing that you might have to pay $40,000 in probate is a good start for people who are just starting to learn about this process, because I don't think I would have ever, I know, in fact, I would have never learned about this had I not taken financial planning courses in college, had I not been an actual financial planner and had trust documents dropped on my desk and was forced to read them. So I do want to say, if you're listening to this and you're feeling like this is kind of fucked up, yeah, things are fucked up. The world is an unjust place. However, Patrick was saying, and a big part of my philosophy is there's a lot outside of our control. Things are the way they are, and we can't change them in one wave of a magic wand, but we can find our agency and we can do the things that we need to do to protect ourselves. And we could do stuff like this. We could just have the conversation and say, on one extreme, it's messed up. On the other extreme, this is something you need.
There are a lot of people who think about financial planning and it makes more sense to them, and they don't see the benefit of estate planning. And it's a really common scenario of hey, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm in good, why do I need to worry about estate planning? One thing that I've talked to people about is, let's just use that $40,000 expense of probate. So you have $1 million. When you die, it's going to cost you $40,000 to go through probate. Let's say that maybe you're not going to die for 30 years or something. You're young. You're early in your life. Well, okay. You could avoid probate by using a trust. So you might pay $500 today through Trust and Will to create a trust, just round numbers. Pay $500 today. 30 years from now, you'll save $40,000. That's a pretty good return on investment. I think annualized, it's about 15%. That's a pretty solid investment to say, I'll put in $500 today to get the benefit of a trust, and knowing that I'm going to save or get a return of investment of about 15% to save $40,000 well into the future. That most people would tell you to take that deal from a financial investment standpoint. So that's really the benefit of estate planning too, is you're making decisions today at a relatively low cost that are allowing you to maximize the impact into the future, and maximizing what you're able to leave to your kids and provide to causes that you care about. For some people, that may be minimizing the bite of estate taxes. for other people, maybe minimizing the court costs they go through. For some people, it may just be simply knowing that I have peace of mind and that my family and those who care for me know that I made the decisions to enable them to reach the positive outcomes that I'm hoping to achieve. So whatever it is that your goals are, almost always those goals are best served by acting today to put an estate plan in place today. There's really nothing gained by kicking the can and waiting other than delaying what is inevitably the right result, which is to have an estate plan.
Well, you sold me, Patrick. You sold me with that exchange. If I pay $500 today, I'll save $40,000 in 10, 20, 30 years. So you got a customer, man. You hook, line, and sinker.
The numbers make it so obvious and objective sometimes. And yet still people go, I don't want to think about it. It's hard. It's sometimes hard to think about mortality and death and what's going to happen. Like it is difficult. I understand that. I've worked with a lot of individuals that said the hardest part of this is to face my own mortality. And one of the things that also helps is, you know, again, think about the things you can control. You may not be able to control your mortality, but you can control the impact you have. So don't focus on death, focus on the legacy. Focus on what you're doing to care for those around you. And it really makes it a little bit easier to take that first step and take each additional step. And most people, once they go through the process, they, hey, that wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I feared this being very difficult and overwhelming, so I put it off. But once I actually did it, it wasn't that hard. I should have done this years ago. It was the most common reaction to completing an estate plan. I wish I had done this 15 years ago. The number one most common response.
Wow. Patrick, I want to thank you for sharing your expertise today, for walking us through all of the offerings that Trust and Will has. Before I let you go, though, part of the show is asking people personal questions about money. And I know you're on here really representing Trust and Will, but I would love to pepper you with some personal finance questions, just some rapid fire ones, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
All right, Patrick. So the first thing I want to ask you is, have you purchased anything that maybe seems frivolous, but in your mind is money very well spent?
I'm sitting in it right now. When I first started working as a lawyer, I had a terrible chair that was a cheap chair from a firm that was making thrifty decisions. And my back hurt. I spent a lot of time and hours in those chairs. And I finally said, I got to do something. And I paid what felt like an exorbitant amount of money for a really good chair. And, you know, 15 years later, I'm still sitting in it. But wow. If I think back now, the amount of just mental wellness that I've received and physical health, but also, I mean, my spouse now who says, you used to come home and complain about your back hurting from sitting in your chair all day. I'm so glad that you bought that chair 15 years ago. So those high touch items, those frequent touch items for me, it was my office chair. And I still sit in it probably more than I should be sitting on a daily basis. But because of that, I'm really glad I made that investment.
I love that. What's one piece of advice, financial or otherwise, that you'd give to your younger self?
I think to do what you can, that small bites are good, not just good enough, but small bites are good. And I know that younger individuals often think, man, it's overwhelming. How am I ever going to get from where I am to where I want to be? And, you know, you get there by taking one step at a time. And it's so obvious, but, you know, save that $5 in a jar. That helps. You know, invest that $500 and, you know, a mutual fund, whatever it is, those small bites, whatever you're able to do, do that. You don't have to do it all. Just do what you can. And doing what you can is enough.
It reminds me of this really weird saying that I've heard of that I'm probably screwing it up. But the thing is, like, how do you eat a giant elephant or something like that? And the answer is one spoonful at a time, which is like, what a weird analogy, but kind of hits to the heart of what you're saying. My next question for you, Patrick. Did you have any financial superstitions growing up?
I may take a liberty with this question. So I grew up in the South. My accent sometimes betrays me, but I grew up in South Georgia. One of the things that I encountered every year was the New Year's Day tradition of eating, you know, pork with cornbread and collard greens and black-eyed peas. And it was always the meal, almost universally throughout the South. And there are certain reasons why, but the black-eyed peas and the collard greens were associated with wealth and luck and prosperity. And those are the things that, you know, I still love that meal. And not too long ago, had that this year. But the association of you've got to eat your collard greens because those are like money and will assure financial prosperity. And you've got to eat your black-eyed peas because those are good luck. And those are the coins. And so it may not be the same. But it's these small associations of these things you do. And that I don't know that I ever had a more financially prosperous year because I ate more collard greens on New Year's Day by any means. So I can't say that it worked out, but I enjoyed eating them anyway. And those are the associations that stuck with me from my Southern upbringing as a young child.
Beautiful. Do you have any financial fumbles that you can look back on and laugh at?
You know, one that comes to mind is being, you know, a poor student and waiting for my next paycheck to come in. And a lot of people have lived through that as well. And literally going and cashing in, you know, coins from a jar that I had saved, spare change, to be able to pay for a ticket to a baseball game. And I remember I have this vivid image of taking that jar of coins and dumping it in, you know, the Coinstar machine, the coin counting, coin sorting machine, and getting enough money out to be able to pay for this ticket to the baseball game. And if I take a step back, it was so absurd that that was what I prioritized with,
right?
I don't have enough money to afford to go to this game. Well, let me make sure that I can cash in all my used coins. Surely there was a better use of those funds, but those were decisions that I look back on. You know, I knew I had a paycheck coming. I knew it was a short-term period, but to literally scrape coins in order to pay for a frivolous outing like a baseball game is probably not a decision I would encourage many people to make, but I went and I enjoyed it and I still had that memory. So sometimes those frivolous decisions in small doses,
totally,
they're okay. So, you know, don't stress too much about them.
Did your team win at least?
They did.
Well, there
you
go.
I remember we went and they won and it was a happy day.
Beautiful. Patrick, I want to thank you for coming on the show, for sharing your personal finance stories, but also, again, educating us on trust and will. Is there any product, any website, any free download that you want to share with the audience?
So I work for Trust and Will, so this may be self-serving, but what I'm going to promote is Trust and Will's Learn and Education Center, where it's not just selling the products and services that we offer, but it's giving away information and resources and knowledge. And one of the most important and most impactful things that anyone can do is equip themselves with knowledge. So you have that nagging thought of, do I need an estate plan? What's it really about? Will or trust? All of those questions have been answered by Trust and Will in articles that are digestible and accessible and available for free. So utilize those resources of, hey, there's information and education available to make sure that I know how to make the right decisions. That's the thing that I think is most valuable, is empowering people to make their own decisions with confidence and competence.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Patrick. Have a great one.
You too. Thank you very much.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Thank you again for listening to Weird Finance. If you like the show, please express that like by giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out a lot. And if you'd like to receive even more content from me, you can sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Nerd Letter. Each week, I'll send you a short email of things I've read and recommend. Sign up for it at thehellyeahgroup.com. Here we are at the end of another episode of Weird Finance, an iHeartMedia production, and just would not be possible without the help of many wonderful, caring, hardworking, and talented folks like my producer, Ramsey Yunt. He produced, edited, did some sound design, and he even sang a little bit on this episode. Thank you to my friend Michael Frosty Snow for lending your voice for this week's PSA. Our theme song was written and performed by me and my dear, dear friends, Jenna Parker and Andrew Parker. If you have any comments, questions about money, suggestions, or you want to be a part of the show, give us a call at 833-ASK-PACO. That's 833-275-7226. Or send us an email at weirdfinancepod@gmail.com. That's it. We'll catch you here next week. In the meantime, take care.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Fedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.